So when it comes to writing a book, it was kind of something I always wanted to do. I definitely thought I wouldn't do it for like 20 more years, but it was a lot of fun, and it was actually very therapeutic, kind of going through like the stages of all the things I've done over time and like how it's helped me. But then it was really like, okay, how can this help other people?
Hey everybody, welcome back. It is your favorite time of the week. It is Wednesday, and it is time for Leaders Talk. As usual, your intrepid host is with you, Andrew Dupuy. I am the Chief Relationship Officer here at Leaders Press. And today, my guest is Laura Sabian. Now, Laura is an entrepreneur on a mission to inspire others to live happier and healthier lives by connecting with their communities, whether it's through news, events happening in their local town. And she does this by publishing Greenwich Lifestyle Magazine and Darien Lifestyle Magazine. A thorough community is created because she shared interests and experiences with boutique fitness studios, and those include Club Sweats, Pure Bar, and very interesting to us, she is also the best-selling author of You Can Thank Me Later. Laura, welcome. So that is a pretty extensive CV there of the things that you do. That's a lot on your plate. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. That's always the most challenging question when someone's like, what do you do? And I feel like I like kind of freeze because there's just so many things and it's just expanded so much over time that it's like a loaded answer. And it also tends to overwhelm people, right? Like they're like, oh my God, yeah. I have one business. How do you have all these businesses? But yeah, so I guess, what do you want to know? You kind of hit it all. So that was great. Yeah, thank you for an awesome introduction.
Tell us a little bit then just about what inspires you. What has inspired you to do that? Because I tell you, I got my hands full with 9 to 5 with wearing only 2 hats. That's a whole wardrobe right there.
Yeah. So I talk a lot about passion in my book. I'm very passionate about all the things that I do. And I think that makes it not feel like I'm working all the time. I really enjoy, you know, being around people, and I'm a little bit of an introverted kind of extrovert where like, when I'm around people, I'm having fun, but then I also like to like be by myself and do things alone. And so I think I get the best of both worlds because I get to go kind of like not stir the pot, but I get to like go in and be with people and kind of brain dump ideas, and then everyone kind of like executes them for me, and then I go back and work on what I need to work on separately at home. And so I kind of get the passion piece out in both areas, and it's just really fun. Like I enjoy what I'm doing, so I love all the different businesses. And I think if I just had one thing, I would be very bored and I would not be fulfilled. So I think the variety kind of keeps me excited.
Did you just kind of happen into this kind of entrepreneurial lifestyle, or was this something when you were young, little Laura was saying, I'm going to run multiple businesses and I'm going to go get her and I'm going to find all these different things to do?
So I don't think young Laura knew what an entrepreneur was. My parents were not business owners, but they will tell you that I was very bossy. One of my cousins was like, yeah, like we did what you wanted. Like if you didn't want to do it, like we weren't doing it. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry about that. Like, I'm sorry I wasn't like as well. Like, you know, like, as an adult, you look back, you're like, oh, sorry. And she was like, no, she's like, I always wanted to do what you wanted to do. Like, so I've always kind of been a leader, and like, people kind of follow that excited personality, I think. And I definitely have that. But it kind of happened by accident. But like, there's definitely been like key points along the way that I think I would have picked up on had I known. I know I didn't go to school for business or entrepreneurship, but I remember when I had my first job out of college, I was home with my roommate, and I was like, oh my God, the way they do this, all the red tape, like there's such a better way to do it. And like, I told my boss, I think this is an ineffective use of everyone's time. And she was like, Laura, like, you can't say that to your boss. And I was like, why? Because I felt like it was not a productive system. You know, I was like, there's way better ways we can be doing this. And she was just like, you know, maybe you should work for yourself. Like, you can't like be on a team and telling people above you, like, this is how it should be better. And so I remember when I told her that I was going to open my first business, she was like, this is a great fit for you, because I just never really liked to do things other people's way. So I think that definitely translates into entrepreneurship a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So And so how did you manage when you're coming up? I mean, a lot of people say, I'm going to start a business. Fewer people say, I'm going to start two, even fewer three. But as you're coming up through the ranks, how did you actually manage to differentiate yourself and stand out? Because you know, everybody may say they want to start a business, but then they might do it and nothing ever really happens. So what was that path like?
Yeah, I think interestingly enough, I was really passionate about the marketing piece, but I didn't know that it was marketing. You know, like I would be like, let's have this event and bring people into the business, or let's, I'm going to walk down the street and start telling people about my business and get them excited and have them come try it. And I think I just organically had that type of personality where I was very creative and kind of trying to come up with different and unique ideas to get people to come into my physical studio location. And I think because I had a passion for marketing and it was different from what other businesses were doing, it kind of made me stand out. I was also probably the only, I was 25 when I started my first business. I was probably the youngest person by 20 years living in that community in Connecticut. I remember when I moved there and I was like, are there any people my age that live here? So I think that alone made me stand out because you weren't seeing, you know, a 25-year-old opening a business. And if they did, daddy bought it for them, right? It wasn't like something that they kind of self-built and did on their own.
So the marketing, that is really the angle that you have to think about when you're starting a business, is really more than anything else. It's like, what am I going to do to get people excited about this? I think people miss that. They think, all right, I'm going to start a business and I'm going to market my widget, whatever that be, or I'm going to make my widget and people are just going to come to it because it's the most awesome widget ever. But you know, that's where people get lost, is they don't understand no matter what quality you make a product, if no one knows about it, no one's going to be able to come to it and buy it.
Totally. Like you can have the best product, but if no one knows it's on the shelf, they're not going to buy it. And so you have to get yourself out there. And I think for me, a lot of my businesses are very local. So being involved in the community and people knowing who I am has helped spread the word about those businesses.
Yeah. And is that kind of what segued you into thinking about becoming an author?
So I always wanted to be an author. That's actually something as a child, like if I would go to Barnes and Noble, I would be like, I want my name on a book on a shelf one day. Like that was definitely
that is
like
the cool
a
part.
Bucket list. Yeah, like I wanted that. Like I loved bookstores. I mean, I own magazines. I love like the physical touch of a magazine. Like no one's starting a magazine in 2019, you know? And so it definitely was something that I really enjoyed personally, which I think, again, all my businesses I'm passionate about and enjoy personally. So I think that definitely is a segment of it. But so when it comes to writing a book, it was kind of something I always wanted to do. I definitely thought I wouldn't do it for like 20 more years, but it was a lot of fun. And it was actually very therapeutic kind of going through like the stages of all the things I've done over time and like how it's helped me. But then it was really like, okay, how can this help other people? So I think it was really great to be like, you know, I learned X, Y, and Z from this. And then here's how I applied it. But if I were to do it again, here's kind of what I would do and how you should think about applying it to your business before you get into this situation. And so I really kind of made it more of a resource and workbook as well as part my story. So it's very much, you know, here's my experience and my story, but take what you can and apply it to your own business.
Yeah. There's something you just said in that immediately piqued my interest. And you said, I didn't think that I was going to do this for another 20 years. Why did you think that? Because I know a lot of authors who write early and love that they did it, but they had that same mindset. It's like, okay, this is something I'm going to do 30 years later. So walk me through that a little bit.
So I don't know. I just think in my head, I thought like old people wrote books. Mean,
that is
know?
Not a wrong answer either.
It's just funny. Yeah, like I just thought that was like something you did in retirement. Like it's not gonna, you know, you're not making like a six-figure income writing a book. Like, I mean, you can get very lucky, but I think, you know, when you're writing a book and it's more about passion, it's going to cost you more money than you're bringing in. So you have to be in a comfortable position where you're like, okay, I'm going to invest my time into this book and, you know, let it help other people. And hopefully it comes back to me. So in my eyes, it was like, I would do that when I had more free time. But in this instance, I just was really excited about it. I blocked out the time and I said, you know, it gets an hour and a half every month until it's done.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way I took that time. But I think a lot of people and entrepreneurs and people who want to be entrepreneurs really struggle with how to manage their time. And I think they waste so much time on non-productive activities or non-revenue generating or non-team building and things that aren't going to drive the business forward. Like, the entrepreneur should always be working on the business, not in it, right? Like, so with the book, I was obviously working on it, but also in it, because I had to write my thoughts. But I think from a, you know, projection forward standpoint, it's like, okay, now I need to have other people like coming up with things for me with my ideas and kind of going back to that strategy of like, okay, create me these content videos and do this and kind of assigning different tasks. Because then if I'm just doing that, I'm not doing anything to grow it forward. Like being on this podcast with you, like this is a great use of our time, you know, but if I was doing something else, like writing another chapter on something that for a new book and not promoting this one, that would be an ineffective use of my time, right? I need to be getting out what I have and making that successful before I'm kind of sharing something new.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And the thing is that idea, the very first thing you said in that, or that I really expected to hear is like, I really felt like only old people wrote books. Mm-hmm. But that's backwards thinking, because you have at this point already had this book and you've been able to use it to do all the things that you're doing right now, like being on the show, going on to others, all of these things. Why in the world would you wait 20 years to unlock all of those doors when there's so much benefit that you're going to be building in momentum for those 20 long wasted years if you put it off to that point?
I think it's just a stereotype, right? Like that's
what we've
seen and heard and thought over time. And so that's just kind of what you assume. Nobody assumes that it's going to be any different. But it's kind of like any business, you know, just take it by the horns and go in and change things. And so I'm really happy that I did it earlier, because now I feel like it's like I have this bucket list thing complete at such a young age. I feel so happy and fulfilled, but now it's evergreen and I can keep utilizing it, right? It doesn't go away. Like my Amazon storefront is now there forever. So that's great.
Yeah. And that's, that's exactly right. I mean, the fact that, you know, you're never going to lose that book. It's never really going anywhere. So there's something I always ask on these shows, and it's because it's a topic that just keeps coming up. And so many of our audience members are aspiring authors. They're thinking, should I do it in 20 years or should I do it now? Mm-hmm. And that's imposter syndrome. Many people I've heard more often than anything else talking to authors, whether they be fiction authors, whether they be our authors, outside authors, the thing that held them back from doing it was imposter syndrome. It's like, why in the world would anybody want to read my book? Was that something you experienced?
No, not really.
Good.
but it's so funny. I had someone say to me the other day, they were like, when does imposter syndrome go away? And I was like, when you stop listening to it. Like, I don't really have imposter syndrome. I feel like I have a visionary mindset where I, in my head, I'm like, okay, like 10 years from now, this is what that's going to look like. And like, how are we working to get mm-hmm. there? And I think a lot of people are too busy living in the past or in the current moment that they can't see the future and work towards it. So I don't think I've ever really had imposter syndrome, because for me, if I don't know how to do something, I just Google it, or I ask questions, or I find someone who has the answer. And people think like, oh, if I have to Google it, I'm putting on a facade and I don't really know. And it's like, do you think anybody knows? Like, no one really knows, right? But it's kind of how you feel and move it forward. And it's interesting. There's so much talk around imposter syndrome, and I can't relate. Like, I just don't have it, because I'm like, just do it. Just move on. Rip the Band-Aid off. Like, if you want to do something, do it. Like, there is no... just Google it, figure it out. And I think people are just scared. They're scared to fail. They're scared that what people are going to think about them. And really, at the end of the day, what matters is how you feel about yourself and what you think about yourself. Like, I'm not worried. I'm not worried that anyone listening to this is like, oh my God, she's terrible. You know, like, what an awful segment. Because at the end of the day, it's not about how I made them feel. It's about how I made myself feel. And if I was able to positively impact one person, then I succeeded. And you're always going to have people that don't appreciate your content or don't, like, it doesn't vibe with them, right? There's a million different personality types in the world, and we're going to jive with who we jive with, and we're going to have people who really like our content and people who don't. And so you can't please everybody. And if you live with that mindset of like, well, I have to do this and I have to make everybody happy, like, you're never going to be successful. So I think people get distracted with the minutiae and they can't focus on themselves. And for me, it's like, if I get home at the end of the day and I'm in a good mood and I'm happy, then my husband's happy because I'm happy, right? So that's a good life, you know? So it's, and the same thing with him. Like, we want to support each other to be happy. And I think people focus very much on the negative or the I can't, or they make excuses. And it's like, you're only making excuses because you don't want to put the work in.
Yeah. I think you found our soundbite for the show. Imposter syndrome. Don't listen to it.
Yeah. I feel like I don't know. I don't know why people have it. Like, they got to get over it. Right. Like, it's a process. Yeah. I don't have empathy for people with imposter syndrome. I think they need to get over it. And if they can't get over it, they're going to have a hard time dealing with customers and clientele. Because you need to not let things bother you as an entrepreneur and have thick skin. Yeah. And if you're worried about things like that, you're just going to stay in your box and never move it forward.
Yeah. And that's right. And you're right. You shouldn't be afraid to Google or ask your chat bot or whatever, because what I tell people when they ask me is like, why should I write something? Cause not, I won't make anything original. I said, there's nothing original except Gilgamesh.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah.
And that was probably cribbed from somebody else.
Totally. Yeah. And it's all, you know, your opinion and your story and then who connects with that, right? Like, people connect with different people for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cause you're always you. There's only one you. So yeah. You know, how can you be an imposter because you're you. So tell me a little bit about, you can thank me later, more than just, you know, the writing process and how you decided to do it. Dive a little bit into what the meat of the book is and why people should be interested.
So You Can Thank Me Later is essentially a startup guide for entrepreneurs. We're mostly targeting towards female entrepreneurs because that's where my experience is, but there's actually a large male audience that has been very interested in it as well. So I think if they can get past the hot pink cover, it's a great read for them. And so it's essentially, it kind of walks through my story and each business and how they evolved and then things I learned along the way that I wish I could have either done differently or changed or adapted. And I used a lot, I referenced a couple times in the book, a couple other business books that I found really helpful along the way. One was The E-Myth, which I recommend every entrepreneur reads. And it essentially really teaches you the importance of systems, like why systems are so important. And so I then gave examples of like, when I had a system and when I didn't have a system and like what went wrong and why having a system was better and kind of, you know, just different employee challenges that I've had over the years, partnership challenges, how to scale, how to hire, how to create a culture in your company. I'm trying to think what else I included. Oh, one of the things I included that people love, because I was an entrepreneur that was self-funded and I didn't have any investors or anything like that. It talks about the pros and cons of investors. Obviously, if you want to have to, you know, report to someone and it's really kind of not your own business at that point, then get an investor. But if not, cash is a four-letter word. We all need it. And how do we get it? And so we talked about that a little bit in the book. And I think people really enjoyed that because that's something that people are afraid to ask and afraid to build those relationships to figure out how to do that. How to protect yourself as an entrepreneur. I'm trying to think. There's a lot of really great nuggets, a lot of really good stuff.
Yeah. And I like that too. One of the themes that you seem to be going over, whether it be your book or your life or all of this, is to put fear aside. Because I do agree with you. One of the things that I think really stops people more than anything else in being an entrepreneur or living that kind of entrepreneurial lifestyle is really fear. It holds them back more than anything. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. And I know I've talked a little bit about it. I know we haven't talked about it yet today, but when I'm hiring people, we use what's called the cultural index to hire people, which is a personality test and it assesses your personality and the other people who work well with that personality type. And it taught me a lot about myself because I do see things down the road and I learned that like, not everybody that works for me can visualize that. So I'm going to give you a great example. In my head, you know, we're building a bridge because we have to go over a body of water and we want to get to the other side. So I don't give a lot of details. And I say to my team, go to Home Depot, buy some plywood. I'll see you at the end of the, you know, the trail. Cause I'm living in like this bird's eye view and there a handful of them are, you know, they're doers and they're kind of getting things done on the ground. Right. And they're like, well, why do we need wood? And in my head, I'm like, cause there's a body of water. Like you don't see that. You don't see the body of water. And it's like, they haven't got to the body of water yet. Right. So it's like, I learned that what I was doing was I was just like brain dumping what they needed to do, but not giving them a reason why they needed to do it. And so when I kind of backpedaled and was like, okay, I didn't, this is obviously a made up example with the body of water, but it was like when I gave them an example of like, oh, this is why you need the plywood because you're going to need to build a bridge to get off across the body of water. They were like, oh, that makes sense. But they needed those details to be able to move forward. I don't need the details. So I learned that it was better for me to have someone on the team that could understand me and my vision, but then explain the details because I didn't have time for it, nor did I want to. And so having that person on the team as more of like a mediator of like, you know, because I would go into a group of 50 people and be like, here's what we're going to do and present this grand idea. And they would all be so overwhelmed. And I would be like, but you get it. Like, why does nobody else get it? And then she would have to explain the details. And so we utilize this personality survey. And the reason you asked me a question, which is why I brought this up, and now I can't remember what the specific question
it was about fear. Is like that.
Oh, yes. And so one of my personality traits says that I have very low, like probably like top 1% in the country, like low risk, low fear. Like I am not afraid to do stuff because I'm like in my mind, I'm like, I have a roof over my head. I have food and water. What's the worst that could happen? So I'm willing to take the risk. I have very low anxiety of fear, but then you have people who have very high anxiety of fear and they don't want to take the risks. Those people are better off working for the risk takers, right? And so when you're building out this team, you need all the pieces because if everybody was a risk taker, the business would fail because you'd be taking all these risks in every area and no one would be focused on the details and making sure there was food and water, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of from the personality standpoint, but also from like kind of building the team and the fear thing. I think a lot of people are afraid to do things and I just don't have that mindset at all and I can't relate to it. So then when someone does want to be an entrepreneur, it's okay to have fear, but then it's like maybe assess the risk. And if you're willing to assess like the worst thing that could happen to you, right, is, you know, you go bankrupt, you do all these things and it doesn't work out. Are you willing to accept that? And if you're not, then maybe it's not for you, right? And that's like an extreme dramatic example. But I think when you're assessing the risk, like for me, I was like, I have my health, I have a roof over my head, I have a loving husband, I'm not worried about it, you know? And so I think that's what people don't, they just worry too much and then they can't get out of their own way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, it's important to have that kind of introspection, especially when you're building a team, because a team can't all be one type of person. The team, the literal definition of a team is that people that have different strengths and you're using those strengths to back up your weaknesses or to add caution to the room or to add fearlessness to the room. You have to have a balance of everything.
Yeah. And so that's kind of, I think it's really important. I think having the right people on the bus, you know, is going to get you forward. And if everybody's the same, you're going to struggle.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, as we kind of wrap up here, how can our audience that may want to learn a little bit more and go further with you find out more about you?
So they can follow me on Instagram. My tag is Laura Labs. They can go to my website and bosslife.co, learn more about me and my businesses. I actually just recently released a course online. Okay. It's 7 days to a better business, and it has a focus area for each day of the week. So for you to take 7 days to completely transform your business and apply some of the different tools, there's an entire day on Teams. You know, if you have people on your team and how to make sure that they're great, and like revenue and finance. And so there, it's kind of just like breaking it up for people to take one focus area per day. And that's on my website. So they can download the course if they want kind of some resources with that. I'm also, you know, if they follow me on Instagram, I post when I'm speaking, I have upcoming engagements, and then they can also purchase my book, learn more that way. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else I should include on how to reach me?
I think
not
going to
give you my cell phone.
We will have that very long list of links there down below, ladies and gentlemen, for you to take and explore. Laura, I mean, I think we could continue to go on about this for a long time. I mean, I say that a lot, but yeah, I mean, you're a wealth of knowledge. I didn't even have to ask the golden nugget question because I think we've already got a lot of really useful things to take away just from our natural conversation.
The golden nugget question, though? I'm very curious.
Oh, I always ask at the end sometimes if we just haven't covered something. You can answer it now if you want. If there's just some kind of a golden nugget, just something that you feel like everybody could use that maybe we didn't cover. I'll go ahead and ask it. Is there something else?
I don't know. That's kind of a stumped question. I think we covered
well, that's why. I think our natural conversation, we really got a lot of them.
Yeah. Oh, good.
And I'll tell you, your golden nugget, I'm telling you, take away from this is imposter syndrome. Just don't listen to it.
Yeah, I think people get in their own way. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Laura, it was absolutely a pleasure having you on today, and we wish you the best of luck, and we'll continue to work together.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.